Today on Maine Calling, on Earth Day, the reuse culture in Maine. You've likely heard that earth-friendly mantra, reduce, reuse, recycle. Recently, we've seen even more R's added to the list, like repair, recover, reject. These R words and slogans are encouraging us to be intentional about purchases, buy used whenever possible, and find ways to keep perfectly good objects out of the waste stream. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will discuss the ethos of reuse today, which is especially strong here in Maine. There are good environmental reasons to embrace reuse, but people have other motivations as well, to save money or to be stylish. After all, reuse is hip. We'll find out about some of the initiatives across the state and we'll hear some of your ideas. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Support for Maine Calling comes from Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure throughout Maine, now open in Bangor, Waterville, and Augusta. And Highland Green, committed to fostering a resident-driven, active lifestyle community for those 55 and better. HighlandGreenLifestyle.com. And Bangor Savings Bank, committed to helping Northern New England communities thrive. You matter more. Bangor.com. And North Yarmouth Academy, a 2025 AP Platinum School recognized by College Board, inviting families to tour campus, shadow a student, and explore its new dormitory.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. The concept sounds straightforward. Reduce waste by reusing items in your life. But our society makes it too easy to use things once and just throw them away. Today, for Earth Day, we're going to learn what it looks like to put reuse into practice in Maine. We're going to look at what that term means in all its iterations. Joining me, Dr. Cindy Eisenhower, who is professor in the Department of Anthropology and the Climate Change Institute at the University of Maine. She also works with the School of Economics and the Mitchell Center for Sustainability Solutions. Megan Mansfield Pryor is an environmental specialist at the Department of Environmental Protection. And Danny Solomon is founder of Second Story Builders. We invite you to join the conversation. How do you practice reuse in your life? Are you part of an organization and would you like to attract more people to your little mission? Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call 1-800-399-3566. Welcome to all of you. To start the conversation, I'm going to turn to my colleague, Molly Enking. She is Maine Public's climate editor. Thanks so much for giving us a call, Molly.
Hey, Jen. How's it going?
Good. I think that maybe a lot of people, when they think of the term reuse, they think about, well, I'm going to go buy some clothes at a vintage store or a Goodwill, or maybe I'm going to make a point to save jars and reuse them, maybe even give gifts in them or something like that. But this is really quite a lot larger than that, isn't this? This is about thinking about a circular economy.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the three R's, reduce, reuse, recycle, I feel like we've all heard them in school. That's also known as a waste hierarchy. And I think something that's maybe been forgotten along the way about the three R's is that it was always meant to be a hierarchy. So first you reduce the amount of stuff you buy and bring into your home, and then you reuse what you already have. And then whatever's left over, then you attempt to recycle that. And so for reuse, that can entail a lot of things, from reusing single-use plastics like bags or containers to buying an item like a water bottle or a coffee cup that you intend to reuse over and over again. It can also mean like repairing items that you have in your home, like socks that need to be darned or a lamp that broke that you don't know how to fix it. Maybe you would send it to landfill. If you repair it, then you can use it over and over and expand its life cycle. And when you do that, even if you only reuse a plastic bag, let's say once, you've already doubled its life cycle. So yeah, reuse can mean a lot of things.
Yeah, and it's interesting to me that you use the word repair, because I'm noticing that there are more and more R words. There's reject, which might mean, not buy the thing in the first place, renovate. But repair, you did a story about a whole sort of repair day. Tell me about that.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, it's funny you say that, because in Australia, and I'm sure in other places as well, they've expanded the 3 R's to 4 R's, and it's reduce, reuse, repair, and recycle. So they've just snuck that word in there. There are repair cafes all over Maine at this point. I've been to a couple of them, and it's an event where you can bring clothing, microwaves, bikes, anything, what have you. And there's people there who will help repair them so you can use them again. So I've been to ones where someone taught me how to darn my socks. I've been to ones where I waited in line. There was a long line between two women who had their sewing machines out, and they helped me fix some pants. And I think what's great about them, too, is if you already know how to do the repairs, it can still sort of just be something that you never get to. So maybe you have a tote bag of, you know, clothes that need buttons sewn on or whatever, and you bring them and you sit together in community and just sew together, and then you can share thread and share conversation. So it's great community building, and it's a great way to actually get those repairs done that might otherwise just be, you know, sitting in your basement.
Well, Molly, thanks so much for calling in. Remind our listeners about the newsletter you write.
Yes, I write a newsletter called Planet Maine, where I've covered repair cafes, we've covered recycling, and we share useful tips on how we can help amid the climate crisis.
Well, thank you so much for calling in, Molly. Anking is Maine Public's climate editor. Cindy, I'm going to start with you, because Molly's talking about this whole idea of repair as part of the reuse cycle. And I'm thinking to myself, that's great, but there are only, as far as I know, two shoe repair guys in Southern Maine. And the person I go to is always overwhelmed. You should see his shop. He's got boots and shoes stacked everywhere. It's almost comical. There was a little lamp store in South Portland that I have a lamp that I wanted to get a new cord for, and then I realized, oh, it's not there anymore. So even though we may have this desire to repair, it's not always easy.
No, it's not. And it's a shame. And I think, you know, it's the product of multiple generations of encouragement toward a disposable lifestyle, right? It became very convenient, very easy, very quick and cheap to just replace things. But I don't, you know, I don't want to pretend that there's some sort of an evil genius, you know, like clicking his fingers together that planned all this. I think it's really, the product of not understanding what the full repercussions would be in terms of ecological repercussions, but also people oftentimes didn't, we were so focused on this growth, right? Always making new things and growing our economies through new production. And I think we're just now starting to understand that you can also, you know, improve your economic systems by saving as well, right? And quantifying all this waste that just pumps through our system. And I think, you know, people are getting tired of it, right? We see it every day in our lives with plastic things that we just use for a few seconds and throw away. And it really, it doesn't feel good. So I think things are shifting. I hear you, Jen. I think it's hard, and it does take a little bit of effort for people to do. But I think once we do, it feels really great.
Yeah. And Megan, one of the ways things are shifting, I'm old enough to remember when packaging for everything was so much larger than it is now. We have smaller packaging, and sometimes no packaging for products that used to come in sort of, and it's still obviously not perfect. But some of this has been intentionally because of laws being passed or ways that local government, state government, federal government has worked with manufacturers. Can you give us some examples of that?
Sure. Well, you might know that Maine is the first state in the country to pass an extended producer responsibility law for packaging. And that's something that's being implemented now. I don't work on it directly, so I can't speak to it too much, but it has a fee structure that will encourage attributes like reusable or recyclable or recycled content. So it encourages producers to make more environmentally friendly decisions with their packaging. And I think the really exciting thing is that it will also enable municipalities to have funding that they could use towards supporting systems of reuse. Like there's a pilot project right now that's happening in Bath with and South Portland and Bar Harbor that Cindy is supporting for reusable food service ware pilots at restaurants, which is really exciting and holds a lot of potential to reduce waste and upstream emissions from production of single-use packaging.
All right. Well, Daniel, when we talk about reuse, we might be thinking about that plastic bag. We might be thinking about repairing your socks. What you've done is entirely different. Tell us about Second Story Builders. Tell us how you got the idea for it and what it entails.
Yeah, thank you. So, Second Story Builders, we're a pretty young company. We've been around for only about a year and a half. And we are a mission-driven business that's aiming to advance circular construction practices in Midcoast, Maine, which is where we're based. So, what this means is we are trying to keep construction materials as much as possible out of the landfill. And one of the major ways that we're doing that is through deconstruction. So, deconstruction is an alternative to demolition. Most buildings today, when they reach the end of their life cycle, are crushed by a big machine and taken straight to the landfill. We are instead doing this more delicately, trying to salvage as much material from older buildings as we can. And this is sometimes anywhere from 80% to 90% of the materials, excluding the foundation, can be saved and repurposed in new
Wow,
construction.
80% to 90%. So tell me what can be repurposed that maybe people might not think. I mean, obviously people love to find mantelpieces and beautiful architectural details, but what are some of the other things that you can repurpose from a building that people are surprised by?
For a lot of the older buildings that we take apart, they were in a lot of ways designed to be moved and repurposed. So most of the materials that are coming out of old homes, a lot of it is lumber, and that's sort of what we specialize in. But really kind of anything, as long as it can be taken apart, it can be reused again. Sometimes we see a new construction that things have been glued or spray foamed. These are the things that actually make deconstruction really challenging, but older buildings are were sort of made to be moved and reconstructed somewhere else. So those are the ones that are sort of yield the most material in our
Yeah, so
practice.
how does it work? Do you hear that a building's going to be torn down and quick get over to the project manager and say, let us in?
Sort of. So we've been getting calls. Word is spreading about what we do. We are currently the only dedicated deconstruction company in the entire state. So that gives us a little bit of an advantage. But we operate similar to the way that a demolition contractor would. So we would be actually paid to do this work. We try to keep our costs pretty competitive with demolition. Obviously, there's a lot more labor that goes into deconstructing something carefully. But we're also saving, of course, the tipping fees at transfer stations are pretty high in the Northeast, so we're saving all of the money there that would otherwise be paid to throw the materials away. So clients who are interested can reach out. Usually what we'll do is just kind of take a look at some images of the building, see if it's a good fit. I will do a site visit and then give an estimate, and we go from there.
And do you have any difficulty finding people to buy the materials?
It's been a little bit of a slow start getting the material sales side off the ground, which is something that I totally anticipated. But every week we're open. We have a store in Union, right off of Route 17. The Radical Reuse Center is what we call it. And we've had a growing stream of customers coming in every time that we're open. So we're open on Saturdays and Sundays from 10 to 3 currently. We will hope to expand those hours in the future. But no, we've had, I mean, Maine has a really strong reuse culture, so people are finding us. We're doing pretty well.
All right. Well, that's so interesting. I'm so glad you're on the program today. Calling in now is Sydney Harris, who is co-founder and coordinator of Reuse Maine, also policy director for Upstream. Thanks for calling in, Sydney.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
What are the goals for Reuse Maine? This is a coalition, right? What are you trying to accomplish?
Yes, so Reuse Maine is a statewide volunteer coalition of volunteers from the community, local businesses, some local government folks, lots and lots of wonderful folks who share a vision of a future without single-use containers in Maine. So we're really focused on catalyzing reuse systems for packaging and foodware specifically throughout the Pine Tree State.
Yeah. How do you think about at Reuse Maine the idea of supporting Maine entrepreneurs, supporting Maine food producers? You said you're focused on the food economy and still supporting reuse.
Yeah, so I think one of my favorite things about reusable packaging systems and foodware systems is actually they're very good for business. Reuse can save businesses lots of money because if you think about it, then they're not having to constantly repurchase single-use packaging and foodware, and they also tend to save money on their waste disposal costs. So we have lots of different projects that the coalition is supporting. One is the reusable foodware pilots that you heard about, I believe, from University of Maine. And so we've been helping connect local cafes and restaurants into the program, connecting volunteers, things like that, and obviously amplifying on social media. We're also supporting the craft beverage community in Maine with new funding available from our updated bottle bill, which is specifically earmarked to support reuse. So we really are excited about a future where we have beer coming in reusable bottles, not just our bespoke dairy programs, which we also love, but more common beverages that folks are buying all in reusable containers. And then also we support cafes that just encourage people to bring their own mugs. We've got a cute little sticker campaign. You might see BYO encourage stickers from our coalition around actually a lot of different coastal communities in the state. So lots of different ways that we're working to support these programs. And we also focus on state level policy. So we're really interested in making sure reuse is robust for consumer packaged goods through our packaging EPR law.
All right. Well, thanks so much for calling in, Sydney Harris with Reuse Maine and also Upstream. Cindy, I need to ask you, though, earlier in the program, Molly was talking about reusing that plastic bag, and the work that Danny's doing is wonderful, but you're one small company in the mid-coast of Maine. And I'm wondering, I'm sure there are people out there in the audience sort of thinking, yeah, this is all great. It's all going to feel good, but does it really make a dent?
Well, it's the answer is yes, it does in aggregate. And I think, we have some good data emerging now. And I think one of the things that's really hopeful is that we can think about reuse on multiple levels, right? So you can think about it in terms of reusing an entire product like a toaster, right? Repair it, use it longer, extend that life cycle so that you don't have to replace it so often. You can think about it at a component level, right? So the toaster is no longer good, but you can still take out the heating element and use that part, right? And repair. You can think about it at a material level as well, right? Are you reusing the metal? Are you reusing wood? So there are a lot of different ways to get involved, and many of them scale fairly well. But I do think that Sydney, who was just on, and Megan has alluded to it as well, there are policy levers that we can pull and incentive structures to help these types of systems scale. And I think that's really important because for a long time, there have been a lot of people interested in reuse, and I'm sure we'll hear from some callers who have been reusing things for as long as they can remember, right? And that's a very important part of the picture. But I think it's hard, right, as we talked about already. And the more that we can do to incentivize, to support what's already happening and to help it build and help it scale, I think that's really the key. And the great news is that a lot of people are now thinking about the circular economy. How do you connect businesses who have byproducts that are currently going to landfill with other businesses that could use them as inputs? How do you connect, the small cafe, independent cafe that makes great lattes and really doesn't want to keep buying all of those paper cups, right? How do you just connect those people? And Danny alluded to the idea that Maine already has a strong reuse culture. And That's something that I can verify. I had a 5-year research project on Maine's reuse markets, and we looked all across the country at data that very definitively showed that Maine's reuse culture, measured by independent businesses that are involved in that sector, is consistently vibrant, even regardless of what the rest of the economy is doing, right? So it's a culturally resonant concept here, and so why not leverage that and support it and continue to build on something that already exists and makes sense to people here?
It's Earth Day. We're talking about reuse. We're going to take a quick break. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Mainers have a long tradition of reuse, trying to be frugal and not wasteful. But there are many ways, old and new, to put reuse into action. My guest to talk about those, Danny Solomon, who is founder of Second Story Builders, Dr. Cindy Eisenhower with the University of Maine. She's with the Department of Anthropology, the Climate Change Institute, the School of Economics, and the Mitchell Center for Sustainability Solutions. And Megan Mansfield Pryor is Waste Management Climate Policy Advisor. Excuse me, I have the wrong title for you, Megan. You've changed jobs. You're now an environmental specialist at the Department of Environmental Protection. I apologize for that. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org. On the line with us now, Ruth Libby, who started Ruth's Reusable Resources in the basement of her home 3 decades ago. Thanks so much for calling in, Ruth.
Oh, gosh. Thank you so much for having me.
Now, you started this because you realized that teachers needed supplies and there were things being thrown out at businesses. Where are you today? Tell us about the scale of your operation.
Oh, gosh. Going from the basement of our house to where we are now, this is, I think it's like 28,000 square feet, just over that. And Portland, we're just on the outsides of just after the airport. And some could say we don't have enough room. So,
and is it still focused on teachers and schools, or are you serving other communities as well?
Well, there's two different stores. We have the main mission is our teacher store, and that is whether a school district joins as a whole district or an individual school joins. So that is then however they join, those teachers in that school, those schools can come in here and shop for free. And then we have a small store in the same building, the same hours, that is for the general public. And so it's different stuff than what's in the teacher store. Mostly like every different kind of craft you could think of is in that store, and prices start like at a nickel and go up.
And what about if somebody's listening today and thinks, oh boy, I have a closet full of office supplies. Do you take donations from individuals?
We have donation day, usually 2 Fridays a month, but always call and make sure, or look on the website at roots.org to make sure of the actual date, because it is just on a Friday and it's 9:30 to 2:30. So it's not all the time. But we take stuff from everybody. On donation day, there could be a line outside with just people bringing everything under the sun, whether it's, all of their Christmas tubes from the wrapping paper. It could be with wrapping paper on it. It could be office supplies from a small business cleaning out or that went out of business. It could be baby food jars. So it's pretty much everything and anything that comes through here. And for us, we will reuse it, put it on the shelves for what it's meant to be, if it's reusable. And if it's not, a lot of times it's me, if I look at it and say, you know what, let's take them apart. We can take it apart and then repurpose all of the parts and pieces that, that created that item, whatever it be, and put it in the teacher store. We don't actually obviously build anything with it. We put all the parts and pieces out for teachers to take it for students to create with.
Yeah. You know, I'm thinking all these years of doing this, and you did this long before it was trendy. What are your thoughts on clearly there's a hunger out there and a desire for people to do things differently. As you've watched the organization grow, what is your thinking about that?
You know, from the very beginning, there has never, literally never been a slowdown time unless I shut the door. It has never stopped. There's more people than ever paying attention to what they are, what they don't want. They're not just putting it in the trash anymore. So there's, you know, there's more people constantly wanting to donate. Businesses, individuals, other nonprofits. It doesn't matter how big or how small the business is. When a couple of the giant corporations in the state of Maine were demolishing their buildings, all of that furniture, all of those supplies came here. Then they recreated, they rebuilt their buildings. But we moved. I can't even begin to count the amount of pieces of furniture, office furniture, that we have moved throughout the state of Maine schools and into some of the nonprofits. It's just, it never, ever slows down. Which is a good thing. I mean, it's great teachers have this much stuff to pick from.
Yeah, well, I know that you're super busy, so thank you so much for finding time to call in. Ruth Libby is founder of Ruth's Reusable Resources. Let's see, we will go to Jessica calling from Westbrook. Hi, Jessica, go ahead.
Hi, I wanted to share an interesting way for businesses to participate in reuse culture. It's through an initiative called Maine Tech Share, and it allows businesses to donate devices like computers that they no longer use, and then they can be refurbished for low-income people in Maine who don't have access to a device. And not only does that help people, but it reduces greenhouse emissions that result from the creation of new laptops, whereas remanufactured laptops only take 6% of the carbon dioxide compared to a new laptop.
Jessica, I can imagine somebody participating in Maine Tech Share might be concerned about what kind of information is on computers. What can you tell them about what you do to make sure that that information is protected?
Yeah, great question. One of the wonderful things about this program is that we're working with GiveIT GetIT, which is the state's only nonprofit refurbisher, and they have a stellar reputation. They use all the cybersecurity practices from the moment they pick up your device to the moment it ends up in someone else's hands. And we have banks across Maine, hospitals across Maine, all these types of organizations that need really high-level security that trust their devices with GiveIT GetIT.
Jessica, thanks so much for calling in and telling us about Maine Tech Share. Let's see, we will go to Jeff calling from Rockland. Hi, Jeff, go ahead.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm the volunteer coordinator for Winks. It's the swap shop at the Rockland Transfer Station. And we're always looking for more volunteers so we can be open more hours. And there's a volunteer expo at the Flanagan Center this afternoon from 4 to 6, where you could come down and stop in and meet us at the Winks table, and we could tell you more about how to volunteer at Winks so that we could be open more, so that we could keep more stuff out of the landfill and help more sharing in the community. So I just wanted to get the word out there about Winks.
Thanks, Jeff. And you're not the only transfer station with a swap shop. That is several towns. That is a long tradition. Megan, do you want to jump in? Do you want to talk about this sort of Maine just part of Maine life in so many places?
Yeah, this is a fantastic tradition in Maine. I love it. I have family in Lemoyne, and when you go to the swap shop there, it's like a community hangout. And I've seen that in a lot of different towns. And some of them have even applied for grants through DEP. We have a waste diversion grant, and they've applied for grants to set up a repair shop so that they can take kind of gently used stuff that might need a little work and then either resell it or give it away to, you know, young people who need a fishing pole or a bike. So it's a wonderful culture of reuse, like Cindy was talking about, that I think is very prevalent in a lot of small towns in particular, and is undoubtedly saving a lot of material from the landfill, although we don't really have a great way of tracking that information.
Jeff, thanks so much for calling in. Here's an email from Jen with Northern Light Health. She says, one of the ways Northern Light Health hospitals reduce waste through reuse is participating in medical device reprocessing programs. Many types of medical devices can be collected after procedures and processed by a vendor that thoroughly cleans, tests, and repackages the device for purchase and use again. Our collection and purchase of reprocessed medical devices reduces the number of single-use items going into the waste stream and also saves us money. So, Jen, thanks for calling in. I think anybody who's ever spent time in the hospital, sometimes you can be shocked by how much stuff a hospital goes through. I know that that was the impetus for the organization Partners for World Health. Elizabeth McClellan began collecting medical supplies, and now that is a major nonprofit in Maine with lots of volunteers delivering medical supplies around the world. Eric says in an email, can you please discuss what steps, if any, the cannabis industry in Maine is taking regarding recycling of packaging and containers used in the industry? Do any of you know the answer to that?
I'm afraid I don't.
Yeah, I don't either. I'm sorry.
That's okay. If anybody out there knows, give us a call. We'll go to Richard calling from Yarmouth. Hi, Richard. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call this morning. I just wanted to introduce the area of automobiles, which are, you know, huge devices in our life. And it strikes me that we don't really do a very good job of maintaining and repairing them. And in fact, I've made a big deal in my life about making sure I retain and repair cars as long as I can, and which means I keep them on the road for, you know, 250,000 miles, 20, 25, 30 years. And I've also, when you're doing this, you're supporting the local economy, and you are also making sure that there are people available to repair. By supporting repair people, you get to make sure that part of our economy still exists. The other thing I think that's helpful is learning how to repair things yourself. You mentioned, you know, sewing and so forth, but there's a huge amount of YouTube videos about how to repair, fix broken things on cars. And there's a huge recycling industry, you know, used auto parts and stuff, which also ought to be used. So those are just a few ideas. I think when you look at, I'm really getting at the point that cars, you know, use a huge amount of resources and materials to get built. And it's really horrible to just throw them away after 5, 6, 7 years or whatever, when they actually can be used a lot longer.
Richard, thank you. Yeah, thanks for calling in and talking about automobiles, of course, an important part of this. Something that Richard said, though, I really want to sort of follow up on, and that is how the internet has changed this. And, you know, YouTube can help you, because I think a lot of people don't have the confidence to do something. But I can't tell you how often I have fixed something on, well, I'll say a refrigerator and an oven in my own case, by watching a YouTube video over and over and over again, even though I have no experience. So if I can do it, Cindy, other people are doing the same thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, there, as I said, there are a lot of good things going our way here. You know, as you said, with access to information online. And I also want to just mention, I mean, I think it's really clear to us that these reuse projects and reuse in multiple ways has ecological benefits and waste-related benefits. But as I was thinking about the transfer stations, I also wanted to mention, sometimes we don't think about it, but like reuse also has really strong social benefits. It helps to build these networks of mutual support and mutual aid. I remember going to a transfer station in China, Maine, that had a chalkboard. Actually, I might be confusing transfer stations. I've been to a lot of them, but had a chalkboard full of telephone numbers of people to call when certain things would come into the swap shop that were needed, oftentimes for very like philanthropic purposes. And then also, as your caller just mentioned, like there are real job benefits here, right? It takes local people to repair. And so it's really essential to preserve that type of knowledge. And it can really, you know, help in terms of economic and job related benefits as well. So there are good things happening. And yes, I think we can all repair. We can all reuse things longer.
And Danny, I saw you nodding when Cindy was talking about the whole idea that this is building community. So I'm guessing that in your case, you're not thinking just about reusing supplies and materials, but something bigger.
Yeah, absolutely. I see this on the ground every day. Before starting this company, I was actually an educator at Camden Hills Regional High School, running a hands-on program called The Hatchery, which was sort of reviving the industrial arts wing of the school. And we did a lot of community-based design build work. And we sourced materials from the region's waste stream for that program. But I've carried that through to this company. You know, obviously in Maine, we need more tradespeople. And so I see deconstruction as an amazing opportunity to build the next generation of green builders. So I've involved a lot of high school and college age students in this process. And, you know, taking a building down takes a lot of teamwork. And it's a great opportunity to build all of the hard skills and the soft skills that go into that. There's a lot of communication that needs to happen. And it's super rewarding. And I think every group that I've worked with has sort of bonded throughout the process of saving these buildings. So yeah, there's all sorts of benefits to doing things a little bit differently.
And Megan, I knew you wanted to shout out the Maine Deconstruction Network. Tell us about that.
Yes, thank you, Jen. So when I did work as a waste management climate policy advisor at GOPIF, I was able to start this informal coalition called the Maine Deconstruction Network. And what Danny's talking about exactly, we're trying to raise awareness. We meet every month and hear from experts in the deconstruction sector. We're looking at different practices that municipalities could undertake or, you know, workforce development. We're kind of exploring the entire world of deconstruction. If anyone is interested in joining, they can shoot me an email. I think my email might be up on the website, and I'm happy to add anyone to our listserv that wants to join.
All right. Well, we are going to take another quick break. We are talking about reuse in Maine. It looks like the phone lines are full, but I'll give you the number, 1-800-399-3566. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Today, we're learning about reuse as part of a circular economy, and we're hearing from a little sampling of the organizations and entities promoting reuse in Maine. Joining me, Megan Mansfield Pryor with the Department of Environmental Protection, Danny Solomon with Second Story Builders, and Dr. Cindy Eisenhower with UMaine. Share your comments and questions. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org. You can also post on Facebook or Instagram or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. I will say right now, looking at the clock and seeing that it's 11:44, there is no way we're going to be able to take all these calls and emails. If you have an event or if you're part of an organization and you want to get the word out, why don't you go onto our Facebook page and post something in our comments, because we need to have some way to share all of these great efforts. We'll go to Micah calling from Portland. Hi, Micah. Go ahead.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to promote a repair meetup that I've been helping to organize. We're called Ripe for Repair. We hold a monthly repair meetup where we help folks repair small appliances, different clothing and knitted goods, jewelry, and bicycles. And I wanted to let you all know that the next one is coming up on, I want to say, May 10th, 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. That's also Mother's Day. And that's at the Allen Ave UU Church in Portland. And our website is ripe4repair.org. Yeah, it's been a great
All right.
Great
and
day.
Ripe as in a banana is ripe?
Ripe as in a banana is ripe. And it's been a great intergenerational event for us. We see just like people from all over the spectrum of different sorts of folks coming to these events. It's been really heartwarming.
All right. Thanks so much for calling, Micah. Let's see. We'll go to Amy in Greenwood. Hi, Amy. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you. This is a great program. I just wanted to say that in my family, we joke that when our mom passed away in 2004, she probably still had the same box of Ziploc bags in her cupboard that she bought when they were invented in 1968. She did not believe in single-use plastic, and I grew up with a clothesline full of plastic bags drying because she would reuse them over and over. And although we're not under any illusions that she was saving the planet by her efforts, she raised five kids, and we've in turn raised our 14 grandkids, and now we're all raising a raft of great-grandkids, and there's not a one of us that doesn't think to themselves, Grandma White would not want me to throw this away. So that's just how it multiplies.
Amy, since I have you on, do you have any tips on best practices for washing a Ziploc bag?
Absolutely. Yep. You turn it inside out, wash it just like you would wash a dish with a sponge and dishwashing liquid, rinse it thoroughly and hang it to dry inside out. I have a rack above my sink, and there are always several Ziploc bags hanging there, dripping, drying, and you can get quite a few uses out of them. I don't think my mom probably had any that dated back to 1968 when she died in 2004, but if she could have, she would have.
Well, thank you so much for that call. We will go to Portland and Tyler. Hi, Tyler. Go ahead.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. And thanks for doing this show today. Can you hear me okay, Jennifer?
Yeah. If you could get a little closer to your phone, that'd be great. But we can hear you.
Okay, awesome. I just wanted to put in, I guess, a plug for my own business called the Sewing Machine Exchange. In Portland, we do sell new things, but we also fix a ton of old sewing machines. And I have a whole stock pile of sewing machines in the back of my store that we pull parts off of and keep a lot of older machines going, anywhere from old treadle machines to anything made recently, too.
Yeah, Tyler, I wanted to ask you, who are you seeing? I'm so glad you called, because I am seeing on social media just a whole lot of and I'll say young people because they are young people who are taking clothing and cutting it up and changing it into new kinds of outfits. And I'm wondering, are you seeing a surge of sort of Gen Z age people coming and getting sewing machines from you?
We definitely are. And those are a lot of the folks that are using some of the older machines, too, which is really cool. And like bringing in like the grandmother's machine they found in their closet and things like that, too. But I've been doing this for quite a few years because I started fixing sewing machines at a store my mom owned close to 20 years ago. And at that time, I felt like it was myself and mostly retired folks who were in the building. But now in my store, which I've owned for 10 years, I'm seeing more and more people definitely in that young generation who are sewing, which is awesome to see.
Yeah, well, thanks so much for calling in. Tyler's calling in, and you said your business is called the Sewing Machine Exchange?
Yes, and we're on Brighton Avenue in Portland. I also just wanted to put a quick plug in for a friend who owns Past and Future Craft, and they're in Westbrook, and they take donations of all old sewing machines and sewing supplies, which there's a ton of out there, and then they resell those for discount prices. So
wonderful. Well, Tyler, thanks for calling in. I'm going to go to an email here from Tony. I live on a very busy street in Saco and find it's amazing how quickly things will go away when you put it out on the curb with a free sign on it. Now, talk about a main tradition, Megan. Free. It's going to be gone.
Yes. It's amazing how effective that is. And I will also say, when it comes to furniture or other things that could get ruined by the rain, a great thing to do is snap a picture of it, keep it indoors somewhere where it's not going to get ruined, and put it on a Buy Nothing group or Craigslist for free if you're concerned about the weather. Otherwise, it is a fantastic way to get rid of something, just putting a free sign and putting it at the end of your driveway.
And I'm so glad you brought up a Facebook Buy Nothing group, because a lot of this, and I'm sure it's difficult to get any kind of sense of how widespread it is, but a whole lot of what's going on here is done through social media, isn't it, Megan?
It really is. Craigslist, Facebook, Uncle Henry's is online now. I mean, it's all over the place. It's a great way to, find anything that you want secondhand, just about.
We'll go to Nick calling from Bath. Hi, Nick. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. I am a co-founder of Peace House Studio. We've been making clothes here in Bath for about 6 years now and just recently opened up a factory store in right downtown Bath. And we started our clothing brand with the idea that everything that we make and sell, we will buy back in any condition, repair and resell it. So at this point, now that we've been in business for 6 years, we've actually had some clothing come back 4 times and resold 5 times.
Wow. Back 4 times and resold 5 times. Who are your customers?
Well, we actually sell, we started as a children's clothing brand because we really thought that that's where we can make the biggest difference. Because, of course, kids are always growing and they're outgrowing their clothing. And we thought, hey, we can, through Visible Mending, we can make these even cooler than what they initially were. But as we went through different shows around the state, adults kept asking for it. So now we sell clothing from sizes 0 to 6 all the way to double XL.
Wow. Well, Nick, thanks so much for calling in. Nick calling in from Peace House Studio. And I think Nick touches on something, Cindy, that's a big part of this conversation, especially if you're talking about furniture or clothing that right now used, and as he said, visibly mended, is in style.
It really is. I think, you know, as people have become more aware of some of the environmental impacts of fast fashion and of fast furniture, there has been an emphasis on more durable, higher quality items that are made to last. And in some ways, people want them to be conspicuous, right? You want to be able to signal that that's something that you are prioritizing and have that be a part of your identity. So yes, it has become fashionable. When we were doing the reuse project on Maine's reuse economy, we were surprised. You know, a lot of the brick and mortar reuse shops thought that kids were no longer participating, and they were very wrong. Right? It's just in different ways now. Right? There are different ways to participate. And I can't tell you how many young people I met that were in the market for 1980s streetwear, and, you know, looking back at the vintage dresses that were so well made in the past, and looking for furniture that has become, collector's pieces that actually have more value because they are so well made and they are designed to last. So yeah, it's definitely spreading. That's for sure.
And you even see movie stars not just wearing things on the red carpet, but making a point of saying, this was last worn here, or this is where I found this. Mm-hmm. We'll go to Davis calling from Rockland. Hi, Davis. Go ahead.
Oh, hey, everybody. Thanks for taking my call. So I'm calling in for two reasons. I run a business called Scrap Dogs Compost. We reuse food scraps and turn them into compost. So reuse of certain sort, but I was also a customer of Danny's, which may be more applicable to today. When our insurance company told us we had to take down our barn, he was the fellow who stepped in and helped us reuse all of that material, and it's really been a special project to be part of and see where all of that wood has gone to. So just wanted to shout out to Danny there and say how wonderful that service has been in terms of seeing value in that material going other places.
Danny?
Thank you for the call, Davis. It was a pleasure to work with you as well, and I'm a huge supporter of what you do.
We'll go to an email here from Clyde. Is there a list of the transfer stations that have swap shops? Do you know the answer, Megan? Is there a list somewhere?
We have a list that is that has not been updated in a very long time. As of the last count, I want to say there were around 84, but I suspect that is not a complete accounting. One of our goals has always been to have a list of all the swap shops and to have a list of all the reuse and repair organizations. So Cindy could speak to a project that she had going with some of her students where they had this massive list of all the organizations. And one of the things we're actually going to be working on at DEP is trying to put up a web page with all of that information, with the idea that, of course, it will be, it'll need to be user generated to keep it accurate. So we're going to say, you know, send us something that we're missing or tell us if something has closed. But that is something that's a work in progress, and I hope it will be posted relatively soon.
Let us know when it's online. We'll go. Sure. We're almost out of time, but we're going to try to squeeze in one more call. Candy is calling from the ferry between Deer Isle and where, Candy? Where are you?
Dearon, New Brunswick.
Okay, so...
Okay, the reason I'm calling you, because I just wanted to know if Rick the Can Man is still open for recycling cans in Calais, Maine.
Do we know about, do any of our guests know about Rick the Can Man in Calais?
Darn.
Sorry, Candy, we don't have an answer for you. Shoot. Let's see. We will go to Portland and Louise. Laura, Louise, we're almost out of time. I'm sorry to ask you to go fast.
Yes. Thank you very much. Where I live, it's Avesta Housing on the West End, and the people in the trash room don't know how to recycle, and I spend my time sorting things. And also, there's huge plastic bags of things, and I only have one small bag that I take down for recycling and trash.
So what you're saying is there's a lot of education that still has to happen.
Yes.
Yeah, and I see my guests nodding. You will be the last call for the hour, and I want to thank my guests for joining us for this hour. Dr. Cindy Eisenhower with the UMaine. She's with the Department of Anthropology, the Climate Change Institute, the School of Economics, and the Mitchell Center for Sustainability Solutions. Megan Mansfield Pryor is with the Department of Environmental Protection. She's an environmental specialist there. And then we have Danny Solomon, the founder of Second Story Builders. Our sound engineer today was Sam Tracy. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow, we're going to talk about electric vehicles on Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Public Radio.